Theater. The more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast welcome you to an hour of mirth and melody with our star comedian, Fred Allen, Kenny Baker and Portland Hoffa, the Texaco Roundtable, the Martins and Al Goodman's Orchestra. It's Texaco time. Gentlemen, tomorrow is the first day of spring, the day when Mother Nature auditions her buds and flowers. But in radio, it is always spring. Things are always blooming. And to prove it, we bring you that perennial bloomer, Fred Allen, in person.
Thank you. I always bend way over when I bow at first, you know, Jimmy. It lets the blood rush to my head where it won't be crowded. It's very helpful. Well, thank you. Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen, again. And thank you, Mr. Equinox Wallington, for that semi-botanical send-off. spring in New York.
Oh. Spring in New York. Baloney.
Mr. Wallington, please. That delicatessen innuendo.
Well, who knows if it is spring here in New York?
Why, signs of spring are everywhere, Jimmy. Trees budding, flowers blossoming, green things shooting up.
Green things. Name one green thing you've seen in New York.
Why, green things come up out of the sidewalks here, Jimmy. Look in front of any A&P. Everything is green. Green traffic lights on every corner. There are four pages of greens in the phone book. And I just took a look at that gold cigarette case you gave me for Christmas, brother. And that is as green as a grasshopper's chin.
Well, that's beside the point. I still say there's no sign of spring in New York.
Why, I am amazed at you, James Wallington. The first sign of spring appeared here last week. Mayor LaGuardia gave the snow 24 hours to get out of town. Of course, the snow didn't get out of town. The whole affair was slushed up. But the public got the drift and appreciated it.
Yeah, got the drift is right. By coming to rehearsal yesterday, I got chapped hip.
That is a sure sign of spring in New York, Jimmy. And to prove it's spring, we spring directly to the latest news of the week. There, incidentally, is a spring fanfare. It isn't even ripe. An old, used green fanfare. Could we have a fanfare that hasn't been used? Could we have an A number one? And a brand new fanfare? Well, that's, Mr. Goodman mistakenly thinks that quantity is music. After all, better off with the first fanfare. The Texaco News presents its highlight from the world of news. New York City, New York. Bus strike ties up city lines as 3,000 drivers walk out, leaving 900,000 daily bus riders free to sample other forms of conveyance. Strike, now in its second week, started March 10th. To date, mediation has failed. Early last evening, a bus spokesman said,
"The bus companies are sitting tight."
Late last night, a union official said,
"The bus drivers are sitting tight."
At an early hour this morning, John Doe said,
"I'm in the subway standing tight."
As crowds scurry daily for other means of transportation, the bus strike still drags on. Texaco News, to get the lowdown on the slowdown, interviews Van About Town to chronicle reactions on the bus walkout. First, Mr. Solomon Sill. Sill, yes. I thought there was a T in your name. Excuse me, Mr. Sill. You You are a bus rider, Mr. Sale?
Yeah, I live in Jersey. I commute.
You do you? Well, has the bus strike inconvenienced you any?
No, I've solved the problem very nicely.
You have, really? How?
Yeah, I come over from Jersey every morning on the 42nd Street Ferry.
Yeah?
When the buses were running, I'd take a bus across town to Lexington Avenue.
Well, you take the bus across to Lexington Avenue.
Yeah.
And now that the buses have stopped...
I have been using a little boy.
You mean the little boy carries you around from...
Oh, no. This little boy has a bicycle.
Oh, and you?
Yeah. Every morning in Jersey, I show the little boy a piece of candy.
Uh-huh.
The little boy follows me onto the ferry with his bicycle.
Uh-huh.
Now, when the ferry docks at 42nd Street, I take the bicycle away from the little boy.
Well, good for you.
I pedal lickety-split to Lexington Avenue, check the bicycle, and go to the office.
And at night?
My day's work finished. I pedal lickety-split back to the ferry, return the bicycle to the little boy, and we both go back to jail.
A most ingenious arrangement, Mr. Sale. But tell me, what does the little boy do in New York all day?
Oh, nothing. He just hangs around the ferry and cries.
And the next morning, you show him your candy and coax him back on the ferry again?
Yeah, he's a gullible little fella, fortunately.
And thank you for this ferry story, Solomon Sill. A woman who experienced a trying domestic dilemma as a result of the bus strike was Mrs. Hildegard Buxbaum. You have been upset, Mrs. B?
What is happening to me couldn't happen to you. What is happening to me?
Well, what, Well, just what is happening, Mrs. Buxbaum?
Well, starting since last September, my little boy, Seymour, I am enrolling in private school.
I see.
Every morning for school by 9 o'clock should be inside, Seymour.
At 9 o'clock?
This is our rule. A bell is ringing.
Oh, I see. That's how it is. Well, tell me, where is the school?
The school is by 66th Street, West Side.
West Side?
We are living by 145th Street, East Side.
East Side. And you come down by bus?
Formerly by bus, we are coming, I and Seymour.
Oh, I see. Well, how did you get to school after the bus strike started?
How else? Bum subway.
Well, how on earth could you get from East 145th Street to West 66th Street by subway?
Foxy Mrs. Buxbaum.
Yeah?
I am doping out the way.
Foxy Mrs. B, huh? Well, how?
First, I'm going to Grand Central, downtown.
Downtown, yeah.
Then I'm going to Times Square, crosstown.
Crosstown, uh-huh.
Then I'm going to 72nd Street, uptown.
Uptown.
Then finally, I'm going to 66th Street, downtown.
Downtown. And?
And boom, 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 it is Seymour School.
Well, that is really a wonderful route.
Wonderful, but I am not taking it.
Why not?
Silly Seymour, that shims. The trouble that boy is making.
Well, what did he do?
The first day, I am putting on Seymour the beanie.
Uh-huh.
I'm taking him by the ear. I'm pushing him under the turnstile. And tally-ho, we are off in the subway.
And on your way to school.
What school?
Well, something went wrong.
Everything is going wrong. The first change we are making at Grand Central, and I am saying, come, Seymour.
Uh-huh.
Son, stubborn Seymour is not coming.
Uh-huh.
With screaming and stamping, Seymour is holding back.
He refused to get off the train?
All day long, Seymour is refusing. First, we are in the Bronx. Next, we are in Flatbush, Brooklyn. Then, we are in the Bronx again. Next, we are in Flatbush again. This is going on incessantly.
You couldn't get Seymour off?
Till 10 o'clock at night. Finally, Seymour is falling asleep. I am taking him home, the little darling.
Well, tell me, Mrs. Buxbaum, why wouldn't Seymour come out of the subway?
Last summer, by Coney Island, Seymour and I are taking in all the rides.
Yeah?
The subway, Seymour thinks, is again the scenic railway.
The scenic railway.
This he is enjoying. He is a kiddie.
And you haven't been able to get Seymour back to school since?
What school? Home he's staying. He could grow up to be a dope yet.
Well, I know, but if he turns out to be a dope in later life...
Seymour could make a living on the radio. You... You are doing bad?
I see. I see your point, but I entirely miss the connection, the subtlety. And thank you, Mrs. Hildegard Buxbaum. One of the many men... All right. A little confusing. Mrs. Buxbaum leaving the microphone and Mr. Lump coming up. We didn't know whether it was a reception or the finish to a grand performance. Now, one of the many men who was indeed happy to see the strike start was this little man who faces our microphone now, Malcolm Lump. Is that right, Malcolm?
Yeah, the bus strike sure was a break for us taxi drivers.
You've been working hard, have you, Malcolm?
I ain't been to bed for 8 nights.
Sakes alive. Well, how do you stay awake?
I stopped drinking Sanka.
You stopped drinking? Well, have you been riding all over town with your cab?
Nah, I've just been cruising up and down Madison Avenue following the bus route.
Oh, I see.
At first, I was stopping at every corner like a bus.
Really?
Yeah, people was clambering in and out.
Uh-huh.
It was bedlam. I had a guy back in the cab making change.
Oh, bedlam. Circulating around,
yeah.
Eh? You were jammed, were you?
Oh, brother. The second day, I had to cut another door in the back of the cab, like a patrol wagon.
In the back so the people could get out?
Yeah, I'm too cramped. I'm riding 20 people every trip.
20 people crammed into one taxi cab? Well, didn't they complain?
Well, they did at first. Then I figured myself out a system.
What system?
Before the 20 people get in the cab, I introduced everybody all around.
Yeah?
Then I'd ram them into the cab.
Oh, that made it all right.
Why, certainly. When people are introduced, they like to be closer acquainted.
Oh, I get you. Well, all in all, would you say the strike was a success?
It was the greatest thing that could have happened.
How do you mean, Malcolm?
Coming right after income tax time.
Yeah?
The bus strike put everybody in New York back on their feet again.
Another Walker administration. Thank you. Well, we hope that the bus strike will soon be settled to the satisfaction of all concerned. For until the buses start to roll again, the New Yorkers' theme song will be...
Hand me down my walking cane, 'cause I must walk downtown again. As long as the buses stay on strike, all New Yorkers got to hike. So hand me down my walking, hand me down my walking, hand me down my walking, hand me down my walking cane.
And so we turn from the bus dilemma to an artist whose fans are transported by his melodies. He's Kenny Baker, the young man with a song. And Kenny's first song tonight is It All Comes Back to Me Now.
It all comes back to me now. Starry summer sky, a laughing you and I alone. It all comes back to me now. A sea of midnight blue, your face uplifted to my own. We called it a thrill of a moment and blame the moon up above. We didn't know what the glow meant. We never dreamed it might be love. It all comes back to me now. The love I threw away, and now each lonely night I pray. Come back to me. and blue. Why does my heart wander aimlessly the whole night through? It all comes back to me now. A sea of midnight blue, your face uplifted to my own. It all comes back to me now. The love I threw away, and now each lonely night I pray that it will all come back to me.
Ladies and gentlemen, spring officially begins tomorrow evening at 7:21 p.m. And to honor this vernal occasion, I have composed an ode to spring.
Oh, what's it called, Fred?
Ode to Spring, Jimmy. Clever of me, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
No wasted words. Well, ode to spring. I'll recite it. Tomorrow at exactly 7:21 p.m., people who look for the first signs of spring will see M. Yes, at exactly 7:21 by the clock, the first crocus will thrust its head through the earth where it is hidden all winter, and robins will fly northward by the flock. So whatever you are doing tomorrow evening, watch your boulevard, for at 7:21, spring spirit, you'll be full of it. Well, how did you like it, Jimmy?
Well, it just goes to show that not all the duds are in gasoline.
Well, if you think you can do any better, Master Wallington, let us hear you try.
Well, I shall. Here's my ode to spring, and it's more truth than poetry.
Fine.
Tomorrow at 7:21 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the season of spring officially begins.
Mm-hmm.
And taking to the road at this new season of the year will be many thousands of new Fire Chief users. Car owners who discovered Fire Chief's all-action performance under tough driving conditions and intend staying with it the year round. The reason for Fire Chief's brilliant, eager performance is easily explained. The duds, those useless, sluggish elements in gasoline, are out of Fire Chief. That's what gives Fire Chief its fast start, quick pickup, economical mileage. It's all driving energy. So next time, try a Texaco dealer and famous Fire Chief. There's not a dud in a tank full.
Thank you.
That was the maestro stole a bow. Then I caught you. You'll put that bow back before the evening is over. That was Amapola, played by Al Goodman and his I've Got to Pass Your Horse to Get to My Horse orchestra. And we have the racing forms to prove it. And now, ladies and gentlemen... Oh, hello, Portland.
Hello.
Well, as the school teacher said to the little boy who spelled snow with an E, what's new?
This is no place for jokes, Mr. Allen.
Well, do you know of a better place for jokes? This is supposed to be a comedy program, isn't it?
Yes, but jokes are old-fashioned. Comedy programs today all go in for romance.
Romance? What romance?
On Bob Hope. Program, for instance. He's always in love.
Well, Bob Hope is a much younger man, Portland.
But you're prettier.
Oh, now, you, you don't need your job that badly, Portland.
And look at Mr. Benny. He's always taking girls out.
You mean the original Mr. Benny? Mm-hmm. Benny with the light brown toupee? Look, the only thing Benny ever takes out on a moonlit night is his upper plate. What gave you this romance idea, anyway?
Well, tomorrow is the first day of spring.
Again with spring. That's all we've talked about tonight, spring. We'll have it all worn out.
Yes, but you haven't had any romance.
Well, how can you inject romance into a program like ours? Look around.
If somebody would take out a girl, we'd have something romantic to talk about.
Do you offhand know of a girl under 70 who would even be seen with anyone on this program?
I know just the girl.
Who?
Olive Fagelson.
Olive Fagelson?
Yes. Olive would be crazy about you. She's nearsighted.
Now, look, Portland, my scamp days are over. The last girl I took out left town and became a nurse with the Confederate Army.
Well, then, how about Mr. Goodman?
Mr. Goodman?
Somebody is calling Goodman?
Yes.
Then out is popping Goodman, like a jerk in the box.
Jerk in the box is right.
Mr. Goodman, would you like to meet a lovely girl, Olive Fagelson?
No, positively no. And this I am saying in all reluctance.
But why?
This I can explain briefly in two words.
What two words?
Mrs. Goodman.
You see, Portland, romance on this program is a dud.
Well, and how about Kenny Baker?
Oh, you can't get Kenny to go out with a girl. He thinks billing and cooing is a dance team. Why, Kenny even blushes when he passes the YWCA.
Well, maybe we can talk Kenny into it.
That we is singular, Portland. You can talk Kenny into it.
Spring, spring, glorious spring. Open the window and hear the birds sing. Tweet, 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 tweet. Hi, kid.
Yes, Kenny, there is no season like spring, is there?
Oh, boy.
The birds twittering.
Yeah.
The soft, balmy breezes.
Yeah.
Does something to a man, eh, Kenny?
I know just what you mean, F.A.
Yes?
Makes you want to get out the old kite and fly the tail off of it.
Well, I told you, Portland. Kenny doesn't even know what romance is.
Kenny?
Yes, Forty?
Have you ever thought about girls?
Girls? You mean those skinny things that wear dresses and open-toed shoes?
Yes.
Yeah, I think about them a lot.
What do you think about them?
Don't their toes ever get cold?
Now, look, Kenny, you're not bashful. You're not afraid of girls, are you?
Not unless they're bigger than I am.
No use, I feel.
Why don't you just try talking to a girl, Kenny? You might like it.
Oh, I talked to a girl a whole hour yesterday, and I didn't like it.
Well, who was the girl?
The cashier at the Paramount Theater, a redhead.
Well, why didn't you like it?
I still had to pay to get in.
But that was a business discussion, a battle of wits.
Yes, Kenny, I want you to meet a girl socially.
What for?
Portland wants you to take out an Olive Fagelson.
What's an Olive Fagelson?
Well, A girl. She is the girl you are to make the date with.
What's a date?
Oh, well.
Well, for instance, you buy 2 tickets for the movies.
Yes?
And you take Olive along.
I can't buy her a ticket for the movies. I don't even know her.
What difference does that make?
She might not pay me back.
Here's Olive's number, Kenny. Just try talking to her.
Yes, I'll dial the number for you
but
on the phone.
I'm liable to get involved with this.
Now, don't be such a fraidy cat, Kenny.
Something tells me I'm being talked into this.
Now, here's the phone. They're ringing the number now.
Gosh, F.A., I don't
ahead,
know.
Go ahead. Answer the phone.
Hello? What's her name?
Fagelson. Olive Fagelson.
Oh, yes. Hello? Is this the residence of Olive Fagelson? What? My name is Kenny Baker. Yes, I'm working, sure. I make around $15 a week. Sure, I plan on settling down.
Kenny, what kind of talk is that? You just met the girl.
This is her father.
Oh, her father. That's different. I see the connection.
Hello? What was that? I should say not.
What's the matter, Kenny?
He says I'll have to bring her home at 11 o'clock.
Well, tell him you will.
How can I? I gotta be home by 10 myself.
Look, ask for Olive, Kenny, and let's get this romance over with.
Hello? Who's this? Oh, you're Olive's mother. I'm Kenny Baker, Mrs. Fagelson. What? Yeah, $15 a week. For Fred Allen. Sure, he pays me every week. He's rich. Wait, I'll ask him. Mr. Allen.
What, Kenny?
What are you doing tomorrow night?
Never mind. Portland, what kind of people are these Fagelsons?
Hello? Oh, here's Ollie. Ollie, this is Kenny Baker. Portland asked me to... What? $15 a week.
Tell Olive, you want to take her to dinner.
But I don't want to take her to dinner. Wait a minute. What was that, Olive? Oh, I said I didn't want to take you to dinner.
That's no way to talk.
Oh, it's too late, F.A. She says she'll come anyway. She'll meet me at Lindy's.
Well, all right. Tell her it's okay.
Olive, Mr. Allen says it's okay for Lindy's. Hold the wire a minute. Mr. Allen?
Yeah?
How much is dinner at Lindy's?
For two, about $3.
$3? Goodbye, Ollie.
Kenny, you hung up?
You bet. $3 is a lot of money just to stuff an Olive.
Now you... You see, Portland, romance is out. It's no use, spring or no spring. It's obvious that no girl will ever take Kenny away from her.
Yeah, I'm hard to get. I'll answer it. Hello? No, Olive. What? Well, that's different. We'll have dinner at your house at 8. Okay, sugar.
Well, I have heard everything.
All right, Olive. Till tomorrow, then. Till we meet again, toujours l'amour. Tut. Oh, boy.
Congratulations, Kenny. Spring is here, and today you are a man.
Boy, am I in for the time of my life. Say, F.A.
Yes, Kenny?
Can you lend me a quarter?
For your date tomorrow night?
Yeah, Olive's kid brother Cecil's going to be there.
I get it. You're going to slip Cecil a quarter and send him out to a movie.
No, I'm going to slip Olive a quarter and send her out to the movie.
Kenny.
Cecil's got an electric train with 40 feet of track. Yahoo!
Give up. I'll take one last chance and try to get Kenny in the mood. I've asked the Martins to dedicate their next song to Kenny, and so then the Martins sing A Romantic Guy, I.
You are so high in the sky that each passerby must know that love is the reason why.
A romantic guy,
your romantic guy, my way
would bring heaven nigh. So why don't you try a romantic guy? A romantic guy,
I see the moon at noon. I see bright stars the whole day through. I see a rainbow in each stormy sky as long as I have you.
I see the moon at noon. I see red roses in the snow. You
kept me from love, and now I know why I see the moon at noon.
A romantic guy, you.
Pale and frantic guy, I am.
So high in the sky that he's petrified. Must know that love is a reason why.
A romantic guy, you.
So romantic guy, my way.
Would bring heaven nigh, so why don't you try? A romantic guy.
Our special guest of the evening, Miss Francesca Drabb. What is it you do again, Miss Drabb?
I sell toast insurance.
Toast insurance?
Yeah.
What is that?
Well, every morning, thousands of housewives all over the country put their bread in the toaster, forget it, and it burns.
Oh, and with this toast insurance of yours, you pay if the toast burns. Is that right?
No, I keep it from burning.
Oh.
With every policy, I give you a parrot.
What has the parrot got to do with toast insurance?
This parrot is trained to sit on top of the toaster.
Uh-huh.
The toast starts to smoke.
Yeah.
The parrot sees the smoke. The parrot yells fire. You turn off the toaster stays.
Well, it's a great idea. I see only one flaw, Francesca. By the time the parrot sees the smoke and clears his throat and opens his beak to yell fire, the toast is already a whole wheat clinker. Now, as Jimmy Wallington often says,
when you see a cloud of smoke rising from the electric toaster, it's too late. The toast is burned. And when you see smoke pouring from an automobile exhaust pipe, the chances are it's also too late. The damage in the form of excessive engine wear may already have taken place, with no help for it except a repair job. Smoke means trouble. So let insulated Havoline motor oil safeguard your engine from excessive wear. Wear due to heat, to coal, and to oil impurity. Havoline stands up under the high temperatures developed by modern engines. Heat that may break down ordinary oils and accelerate wear. Havoline flows freely in cold weather, helps prevent dry, wearing starts. And Havoline is distilled to remove carbon-forming impurities. Take no chances with smoke and trouble. Change to insulated Havoline at your Texaco dealer. Texaco Star Theater continues immediately after a short pause for your station identification. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
WABC, New York.
You should. I just dozed off. Excuse me, Uncle Jim. That was You Should Be Set to Music from the popular musical review, Crazy with the Heat. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we open our Texaco Roundtable for a short fiesta of trivia. Our three guests are ready for their unrehearsed participation, and Portland, I hope, calls the roll. Are you ready, Portland?
Yes. Mr. Al Jordan from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Well, good evening, Mr. Jordan.
Good evening, Mr. Allen.
You're from Charlotte, Portland said. Charlotte, North Carolina.
Charlotte is right.
Is that down in tobacco auctioneer country, is it?
Partially.
Partially. Winston-Salem is really in the heart of the tobacco auctioneer country, isn't it?
That's right.
Well, will you tell me, coming from such a warm and wonderful climate, what are you doing up here in New York in this frigid weather? You're getting your full value out of winter underwear or something? What possesses you to come up here at this time?
I'm attending the International Convention of Beauty Shop Owners.
Oh, the Beauty Shop Convention? Are you in the beauty business?
I'm in the beauty supply business.
I'm
a jobber.
Oh, a jobber, huh? I'd never know it to look at you. I hope you're not going to do a job on me as long as you're up here tonight. Well, tell me, how is the beauty business? Are you making a pretty penny? Now, wait a minute. But how is business? Is it good?
Very good.
Well, tell me, what is the purpose of this convention? Is the convention you fellas get together and look at each other? What is the purpose of it?
It's to instruct the beauticians, the shop owners, and the new merchandise methods.
Ah, you all get together and sort of talk things over, huh? Well, beauty business is a highly specialized business now, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
They have beauticians, fancy names, cosmeticians, and I saw a sign the other day on Madison Avenue. A manicurist has a sign out. She's a fingertician. But tell me, why with all of the beauty preparations, Mr. Jordan, that you fellows have worked out for women's faces, why is it none of you guys ever get together and invent something that will help men with their faces? Now, look at a woman can disguise herself. A man, if he's born with a homely face, is stuck with it. What can he do? He can grow a beard and hide it. Or he can shave every day and go around all through life getting laughs. I mean, why don't you fellas work out some preparations for men? Have you given it any thought?
Well, we've given that some thought.
Well, now that you've seen me tonight, I know you're going to give it a lot more thought. Let me hear from you as soon as you get something worked out. A veil or a mask will do anything. Well, thank you, Mr. Jordan. And now, Portland.
Miss Helene Newberg from New York City.
Good evening, Miss Newberg.
Good evening, Miss Allen.
May I ask you, do you work in New York? Are you in
yes,
business?
I do.
May I ask what type of work?
I'm an assistant to an interior decorator.
Oh, are you? Do they have assistants, interior decorators?
They most certainly do.
Must be stuffy in small quarters when you're doing it. tell me, how does one get to be an interior decorator? Do you go out to Grand Rapids and learn about furniture from the ground up, or how do you do it?
Well, that's about it, I guess.
You do, huh?
Uh-huh.
You go to Grand Rapids, and from there you come right back here and go into business. Is it a big business here in New York, interior decorating?
Yes, it certainly is.
It is. I know it's very popular out in Hollywood. All the stars have the interior decorators in. Movie style, have an interior decorator come in and lay out the plans with the furniture and everything, and then the following week, the installment man comes in and carries out the whole idea. But they do a lot of nice work. They have fancy homes. Bing Crosby in his house has neon rat holes. But if I ever get a room and some furniture simultaneously, I'll give you a ring, Miss Newberg.
Thank you very much, Miss Allen.
Portland.
Lieutenant Bernie Lay of Berkeley Springs, West Virginia.
Lieutenant, are you in active service, are you?
No, I'm on inactive status right now.
Oh, are you really? What are you doing in New York, may I ask?
I'm here as a guest of Paramount for the world premiere of I Wanted Wings at the Astor next Wednesday.
Oh, it opens at the Astor next Wednesday? Wanted Wings?
Yes.
I know. That's the way I felt the minute I finished that picture with Benny. I said to myself, if I ever wanted wings, I wanted them at that time. But how are you connected with the picture? Did you write it or direct it or what?
I was one of the writers and act as a technical advisor in the final stages.
Of the picture, huh?
Yes.
Well, I hope that's a good omen going into the Astor. I Wanted Wings. If it chases the dictator out of there, I hope that it presages things to come in the future. Well, thanks a lot, Lieutenant. I'm sorry. I'd like to go into that thoroughly with you and talk over the... were you on the Paramount lot when I was there?
Yes. Yes, I was working on the picture then.
Oh, were you? Well, they worked me mostly at night, you see. We had to come in. I was on the night shift. Benny was on the day shift. If you saw the picture, you know which part was made at night. You really should see the picture with a torch if you want to see me in the picture, Lieutenant. Well, that brings us to our question. And since the Texaco Roundtable's discussions are confined to trivia, tonight we take up a minor matter that concerns barbers and beauty shop operators. So many cartoons have been printed and so many jokes told about barbers, incessant talking, and the tendency of girls working in beauty parlors to disseminate gossip on the job that we'd like to know how the average customer feels about the situation. And so our question tonight is, should a barber or beauty shop operator annoy the customer with small talk in an effort to be sociable, or should the barbers and operators do their work in silence? Now, Mr. Jordan, of course you're in the beauty business, you may be prejudiced, but how do you feel about barbers? Do you like the loquacious type?
Yes.
You do? You like to have the barber talk to you?
Yes.
What do you go in a barber shop for? For a haircut or a conversation or just to be sociable? Do you think that the barber doesn't annoy you when he talks? You think he's within his rights? Did you ever hear a barber with a sane viewpoint on what he was talking about?
I have to say yes.
Oh, well, naturally, I forgot the business, Jordan. You should really be disqualified at this conference, Mr. Jordan. Well, Miss Newberg, how do you feel about beauty shop operators? Do you think the girls talk too much or have a tendency to spread gossip or talk about their more prominent customers?
Well, sometimes it can be very interesting.
They say you're reading the gossip columns, huh?
Uh-huh.
You approve of it, then?
I most certainly do.
You don't
do.
Just like to go in there. Of course, I imagine with some women, the operators have a hard time getting a word in edgewise. The customer beats them to the conversation. Well, Lieutenant, how do you feel about the talkative barbers? Do you feel that barbers should talk at their work, or should they wait until such a time as the customer shows that he is desirous of having verbal traffic with the barber and then have the barber open up? How do you feel about it?
Well, it all depends on whether they used mouthwash.
Oh, it all depends on whether they... Well, that's another argument, of course. I was just citing a composite barber who had no features, breath, or anything else. Well, our little round table stands, or sits, rather, apparently undecided. I take pride in the fact that our little discussion tonight has gotten us no place, and I'm sure that windy barbers will be just as windy tomorrow as they were today. And since it probably won't be safe for me to show my face in a barbershop from now on, after bringing up this question, I'm learning to cut my own hair. And on this frugal note, the forum closes, and thank you all for your fine cooperation. Gentlemen, we return you to Kenny Baker. Kenny's leaving tomorrow for Chicago, where he is singing next Sunday with the Chicago Women's Symphony Orchestra. And all Kenny Baker fans are invited to tune in for Kenny's concert appearance next Sunday afternoon. And now to sort of warm up for Sunday, Kenny sings Nobody Knows the Trouble I've Seen.
Mr. Allen, can I borrow your storm?
Borrow my storm, sir?
Yeah, I'm Quigley, sound effects man at Studio 3.
Well, I don't...
We're putting on offense of the storm. We got the offense, but the storm machine is busted.
Oh, your storm effect doesn't work in Studio 3?
Well, not good. You know how a storm ought to sound. Something like this. Woo! Woo!
A windstorm. Well, yeah. How does your storm sound?
Woo!
In other words, your storm machine isn't flexible enough.
Yeah, and it ain't got any power, neither.
Well, if you want flexible power, sir, I recommend that you lend an ear to our flexible flyer, Larry Elliott.
Yes, when you call for power, you want it. Lots of it. Power to get you off to a quick start. Power to permit you to maneuver your car smoothly in traffic. Power to lift you up and over the hill. And that's where the alert, flexible power of Sky Chief comes in. Texaco's different premium gasoline. Just touch the starter and your engine quickly takes over. Bear down a bit on the accelerator and you're in motion eagerly, effortlessly. With quick start, surging acceleration, soaring power on the hills, Texaco Sky Chief gasoline has a way of bringing out the finest performance in any car. Try Sky Chief soon. It's your Texaco dealer's luxury gasoline for those who want the best at the usual premium price.
Now the Texaco Workshop players pay tribute to the production that has made history in the New York Theater, the play that is now in its eighth year on Broadway, Tobacco Road. On October 3rd, 1933, the play Tobacco Road opened unheralded in New York City. The story of a shiftless folk and their hillbilly trials and tribulations became a smash hit. Since 1933, Tobacco Road has been played in 247 cities and 41 states by touring companies. Daryl F. Zanuck's great picture version of Tobacco Road has recently been released, and the original New York company is still playing to capacity business here in its eighth year. Its attendance record...
Tobacco Road is played to 2 million grad, 4 sorrow-outer, door-bone people.
Its receipts...
Tobacco Road has grossed 12 pin and trouble nugget dollars and 15 cents.
15 cents?
A lady in Albany forgot her chain.
Oh, I... You rapped on the window with the sponge, as usual. The original Jeter Lester in Tobacco Road recently said...
I played Jeter till I got too old to creep on the stage. Then my son took over.
Well, is your boy still playing the role?
No, my son played Jeter till his arteries backfired.
Yeah?
Then his son took over. My grandson's playing Jeter today.
3 generations in your family have played the Jeter Lester part.
Yep, yep. All of us played the Jeters till we got 'em.
Have you still got the Jeters?
My hand shakes so bad, I quit tipping my hat. Looks like I'm strutting.
Well, it's your age. You have to watch those things. The original Emmy Lou, the girl who eats a turnip at every performance, recently told a friend...
I've ate so many turnips I have to stay out of pet shops. Rabbits snap at my breath.
And still with its turnip-eating ingenue and its inexhaustible supply of Jeters, Tobacco Road continues to run and set new records in the Broadway theater. Archaeologists predict that this generation will never live to see Tobacco Road close. The sequel to this play, they say, will never be shown in our time. And so then, to forestall this dilemma, tonight the Texaco Workshop players bring you the sequel to Tobacco Road. It's called Nicotine Alley. Music, maestro.
Peter! Peter Fester, wake up!
Dog, dang, lazy old coot, wake up!
What's up, Ma?
Everything's up but you.
What time is it?
It's spring.
It's spring? What year?
1941.
41? You mean 31, don't you?
I said 41. 41's what I mean. You've been sleeping 10 years.
10 years? Jeepers. What's been going on, Ma? Who's president?
He still is.
He is. Where's Granny Pester?
Granny passed on back in 33.
Did, eh? Where's Gramp?
Gramp didn't bother coming back.
Coming back from where?
Cemetery.
Ah.
Gramp was 94 and his shoes was undone.
Yeah?
Gramp said what was his wild come home again.
Long's Gramp was there and his shoes undone, saved himself a trip, I reckon. Where's the kids?
What kids?
Our kids, remember?
Oh, them.
Oh, yeah, them.
Well, Big Sadie run off with a medicine show.
Well, I know that had happened. Big Sadie was always sickly. Knowed something like that would happen. What about t'others?
You recollect Sour Sam?
He was the little shaver with no holes in his nose, weren't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Sour Sam joined up with some feller named Ripley.
Yeah, yeah. What became of t'other boy, the little fellow with eight toes?
Oh, that's Burley.
Burley, yeah.
Burley went west. Got a job stamping out forest fires.
Doing well. Well, I reckon I'll get me out of bed, Mar.
First thing you better do is take a bath. I'll go out and dam the creek.
Now, hold on. I ain't a bathin', Ma. My pa never bathed, and his pa for him never bathed. And his pa for his pa never bathed. And I ain't... Who's to the door? Unlatch and track in. Tupper Manser.
Howdy, Teeter.
Howdy, Tupper.
Howdy, Miss Fester.
What brings you snooping round, Tupper?
There was talk down to the barber shop. You was out of bed, Teeter.
Yeah.
I didn't believe it. Just dropped in to make sure. Good day.
Darn busybody comes round every 10 years, inserting his nose into other folks' affairs. Dirty poke nose.
Tupper may be poke nose, but he ain't dirty, Pa. Tupper bat.
And I don't bat. Now you know the difference between me and Tupper.
Well, you ought to use that there cleaning gadget that salesman left last year.
What is it, a squoogey?
No, looks like a brick.
Yeah?
There's writing on it, see?
Yeah, what's it read there?
S-O-A-P, SOAP.
SOAP?
Yeah. Salesman says this here SOAP cleans you fine.
I'll remember that SOAP.
Howdy, Ma.
Howdy, little Teeter.
Hey, who's this here rube, Ma?
This here's your pa, little Teeter.
No kidding.
Don't you know your own pa, son?
Oh, I didn't recognize you standing up, Pa.
What you been up to, son? You smell of freshette.
I've been out of sweet-talking love of Hatfield, Ma.
Sweet-talking? You ain't gone calico mad, son.
Well, I did give Lovey a piggyback down to the old drugstore.
Son, you didn't go into that drugstore.
Lovey made me, Ma.
What went on in that drugstore, son? Out with it.
Well, your pa speaking to your son.
What went on in that drugstore, that iodoform den?
Well, I bought Lovey a Coca-Cola with one straw. We took turns.
A son of mine alternating on a Coca-Cola?
You only 35, son, and alternating?
Alternating, Ma. Alternating.
The devil must have been in me, Ma.
Tell me the worst, son. Was the Coca-Cola with lime?
Pa.
The truth, son. Was it with lime?
Yes, Pa.
Well, you'll have to marry the girl. Ma, we'll get over to Hatfield's. Where's my gun?
Read, hold the wedding, Pa. Eating comes before marrying.
Maybe Ma's right, son. It's coming on supper time. Go run your arm down the gopher hole, son. We'll have supper.
Okay, Pa.
I reckon that's Zeb Tinkham with the mail.
Letter for you, Tina.
Thank you, Zeb.
Want us to come in and read it for you?
No, I can hear you all right. There's three of us to home, Zeb. Reckon three of us can handle her.
Okay.
What is it, Paul?
Well, looks too small for a catalog. Postman says 'twas a letter. Wait till I get the bark off it here. Reckon the writing's inside. Yeah, she's open now. Next thing's to read her. Let me see.
You got the letter upside down, Pa.
I know. I'm reading her the hard way, son.
Oh, let me read her, Pa. I can read writing.
Okie baby dokie, son. Here, take over.
Checks. It's from the government.
The government? What's he want?
Says the government wants to buy our land. We've got to get off.
Hey!
Says here the government man will be here today to take over.
Whoopee! We can sell the land for money, Paul. I can get new string from a son to apron. Whoopee!
Money! I'm a-taking Lovey for another coke.
Buy jeepers and buy creepers. Nobody's buying this land. Us Festers has lived and died on this here land for 200 years. No Fester never bathed, and no Fester never sold no land. Buy jeepers and buy creepers. Stephen, this is that government man. Here's where I get my revenge for Gettysburg. Unlatch and trek in, Yankee.
Excuse me, my name's LaGuardia. Which way's the New York Aquarium?
What's the aquarium?
Well, this is where we're building it. Isn't this Bronx Park?
This is Ozark County, Tennessee.
Darn that 6th Avenue subway.
No wonder he gets lost. He can't see nothing from under that hat.
Why don't you sell him the land, Paul?
No, buy jeepers and buy creepers. I was born on this land and I'm dying on this land. Buy jeepers and buy creepers.
This must be Mr. Givment now.
Mr. Givment, hey? Unlatch and trek in.
Teeter Fester?
Yeah? What's it to you?
I'm from Washington, from the Givment.
The Givment, hey?
I'm here to buy this property.
Well, tain't for sale, mister.
You've got to sell, Fester. The government is building a training camp here on your land.
Training camp?
You going to put trains on the land like a depot, mister?
No, Rove. The government is training men. It's the draft.
Well, sounds daffy. Men training to sit in a draft.
It's the army draft, lady. Haven't you yokels heard about the war?
I thought the war was over when Dewey took Manila.
No, no. I haven't got time to explain the world situation, folks. Here's a check for your land. Now beat it.
No, by keepers and by creepers. Asbestos has been living on this land for 200 years, and we ain't aiming to move.
Oh, this farce has gone far enough. If you hillbillies don't get off this land, Mr. Big will put his foot down.
Threatening won't get you no place, stranger. I'll whole-handle you and Mr. Big off the land.
Oh, yeah? If you think Mr. Big is joking, I'll just tack this poster on your door here. There. That's your official notice, Fester. Good
What's that write and say? Let me see now. Give him a... By cheapers and by creepers. Hitch the mule, Ma. Pack the Sears robot catalog, son. We're getting off the land.
But, Pa, you swore you'd stay.
I did, Ma, but no Fester can stand the penalty that Mr. Biggs writ on that law paper.
What's Mr. Big allow?
Says anybody obstructing the construction of this army camp will find himself in hot water.
Hot water?
They're threatening me with a bath, Ma, and I can't take it. By cheapers and by creepers. Nightcap word from Larry Elliott.
The next few moments are devoted to the entire petroleum industry by the Texas Company. You may call it petroleum or just simply oil, but no other single resource in so short a period of world history has played so great a part in building a nation like the industrialized and mechanized America of today. And now as America mobilizes, our available supply of oil, the lifeblood of our democratic economy and defense, is the greatest in our history. Through research, exploration, and scientific production, the petroleum industry has planned and is now prepared to meet not only the daily demands of our civilian life, but every demand of America's defense program.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. This is Fred Allen saying good night for the more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast and inviting you to drive in anytime. Remember, you're welcome.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.